These are words from the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain.
And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." May God bring these words home to our hearts and to our lives. Just to give you a little more background to myself, I have been here a number of times. Betty and I served together at Burns Memorial United Methodist Church way back when. So we've known each other for quite a while. I'm a retired United Methodist clergyman, but still in private practice as a psychotherapist, and have been since 1985. And it's a delight to be here with you this morning and to share this with you. I also, my son and his wife and daughter worship here. They chose not to be here today. I think Jonathan thinks he's heard everything I've got to say. There's a family event taking place that they are attending, and I will join them there later. But indeed, it's nice to be here, but I discovered something about your church today I had not known before. I didn't know it was a church of loose hookers. That's one I've not heard in any Methodist church in all my life, so it's quite the thing. I would like to focus for our thoughts this morning on this one beatitude. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. My favorite and really honestly only exercise is walking. I've been walking for years, but I've learned in those years that a walk is probably the best place to gain some kind of insight into the scriptures. And I want to share a story with you, a true story that happened to me just a few weeks ago on my morning walk that has given me some insight into this teaching of Jesus. I was about a block from home walking along Alameda Avenue in Aurora. Now, this is a very busy street. Three lanes and two directions, zip, 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 all day long and all night. And there was a pause or break in the traffic, and I thought I heard somebody crying. And I looked all around. I couldn't see anybody at first. And finally, I looked across the street into the yard of an apartment building complex. And there stood this little three-year-old boy with his hands in his eyes, and he was just bawling. His dog was standing there with him. And I thought surely somebody would come out of the building and come around the corner and pick him up and take him back to where he should have been. He probably slipped out of the building when somebody wasn't looking. But nobody showed up. So I said, I better go over and see what I can do. So I crossed my half of the boulevard and got to the median. Traffic was coming the other way between us, and I was waiting for that traffic to pass. And all of a sudden, all these cars started screeching to a halt right in front of me, and you know, brought me up. And I looked down, and here comes this little three-year-old boy right across three lanes of traffic with his dog following him. Nobody was honking. His angel was with him. He made it right over to the median. He came over and he stood right in front of me. And his pit bull came with him. And just as soon as they both got on the median, that pit bull came after me. All I had was my walking stick. And years ago in my walking practice, before I needed a walking stick, I started carrying one just to sometimes have to fight off dogs. And so there I was, you know, kind of sword fighting with this pit bull, trying to keep him away. And I heard another car come to a screeching halt right behind me in the gravel. And in a minute, just not a minute, just a couple of seconds, this very tall woman came along my black backside on the side where the little boy was. And she reached down, she picked up this little boy and held him to her arms. And then the pit bull turned on her. And as that pit bull leaped for her, she just grabbed that pit bull by the collar and held it up off the ground. and she stepped out into the traffic on Alameda Avenue, and the car started screeching to halt again. And she walked across the street and took this little boy and the dog to the office building for that apartment complex. Would you believe it if I said I was relieved? I tell you, my legs were just jelly. You know, it was all I could do to kind of recover from that. And I was so grateful for that woman. She did things that I wouldn't have had the courage to do, but you should have seen her. She just grabbed that dog by the collar and lifted it right off the ground, and all those threatening barks suddenly became like a yipping puppy, you know. and the dog knew that he had been had. Now, we could call this act by this woman a brave act, which it was. We could call it a kindness, which it was. And we could go on with a host of other descriptions of what this act was. But as I reflected upon this moment, I came to see that this was really an act of mercy that was extended to me by this woman. And I would like to explore this story and this scripture together and see if we can weave a tapestry that will give us some understanding and guidance for our own lives. If you'd like in the bulletin today, I entitled this sermon, Be Merciful to This Text. Because the text of Be Merciful is not a very popular text and is not preached on very often. It gives up some ideas that people don't like to deal with. Karl Rahner, one of the greatest theologians of the last century, said in his reading of 2,000 years of church history, the Beatitudes of Jesus are the least written about of all the teachings of Jesus in the 2,000 years of Christian history. Because, he said, they're just too hard for people to grasp with their minds. And so, you know, theologians are usually up here in their minds. So there's not a whole lot written, and most of what's written is the same old stuff over and over and over. But not to be outdone by any theologians, most of us do better than that. We just ignore the teaching completely. We dismiss it. We say, well, I've tried it. You know, it's kind of a tit-for-tat attitude. I was really nice to her, but she let her dog loose on my flower bed. And so I'm not going to show mercy to her at all. You know that kind of tit-for-tat? I show mercy, I should get it back from the same person. But maybe that's not quite what this teaching is about. Or even more than that, we listen to the TV and to the news, and we hear all these statements about somebody throwing themselves on the mercy of the court. And we get outraged when we feel that somebody should suffer for their punishment or for their crime, and they're let off scot-free. How many of us have been caught saying that dirty SO so-and-so should rot in jail? That does not sound very merciful, does it? So what's going on in this teachings of Jesus that might be really important for us that we have missed because some of our personal biases or because it's just been neglected by the church over the years? Now, when I get into the teachings of Jesus, where I go most often for help when I stumble is to a scholar by the name of Neil Douglas Klotz. He is a Sufi by faith, belongs to the Islamic tradition. But he's an Aramaic scholar, and he writes extensively about the teachings of Jesus. He has several books out on the teachings of Jesus. We need to remember that Aramaic is the language that Jesus spoke, and it's a very poetic language. And his words were translated into Greek for the New Testament, which is a very philosophical language. And then the words were translated from the Greek into English, and you know, we're very practical. So there's been a lot of changes taking place in that. So what we want to do this morning is follow Neil Douglas Klotz into this teaching of Jesus and see what it is in the Aramaic. And I'd like to start with the word mercy. Do any of you know in Aramaic what the word mercy, what the root of the word mercy is? It's womb. W-O-M-B. Womb. Blessed are the womb-like, for they shall find the womb of God. Gives a little different flavor, doesn't it? Blessed are the womb-like in their acts and in their thoughts and in their actions, because they will find the womb-like or the wombness of God. And it gives us a lot more options. Just think about a womb. A womb and a woman carries new life. There is a hiddenness in the womb. When a woman is carrying a child, before that child can come to term, to full term, and live in the world, it has to be in this womb-like protected shield. Wombs remind us of tenderness, of joy, of expectation, of hope. I have seen the toughest men you have ever known, when they put their hand on their pregnant wife's womb, break into tears. Blessed are the womb-like, for they shall find the mercy or the wombness of God. This woman offered an act of mercy to me and that little boy, because she knew that mercy in that moment was protectiveness, and she acted on it. But we're not through. This teaching goes on. What's the Aramaic at the root of the word blessed? It's often translated as happy, but that's just a little light for what it is. The root of the word blessed in Aramaic is ripe, R-I-P-E, ripe. Now, there are probably enough of you who know each other a long period of time here that we could have a lot of fun with talking about the ripeness of the characters in this congregation. But I haven't been here that long, so I can't do that. And that's not quite what ripeness is. But ripeness is more accurately what we would call consciousness or awareness. A ripe awareness or a ripe consciousness is a consciousness that has come to full blossom in the moment and is ready to offer the fullness of what it has. It's an act of illumination that takes place inside of ourselves. So what's happening here is the gift of practicing mercy is to become ripe with consciousness, an ability to be able to read what a particular situation needs in the way of mercy. Does it need hiddenness? Sometimes something is just too tender to be brought into the light. And if we're conscious, we don't impose something upon that. We listen to that and keep it hidden. Sometimes the ripeness in the moment calls for protection. That's the way mercy is explored and given in that moment. And that's what this woman did for me and for that little boy. Sometimes it's joy. Sometimes it's anticipation and expectation. But what Jesus is saying in this particular teaching is that when he says, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy, he is saying, ripely conscious are those who live in the womb, because they will also live in the womb of God. The more mercy, the more wombness we practice, the more wombness there is for us to enter into, because the whole world in its own way is the womb of God. If we have the ripeness of our consciousness to be able to recognize the womb of God that is standing before us in a particular moment. That's a long way from hearing this as a moral injunction. You must practice mercy or else. how resentful that is. That's of the head. And we don't like that, so we just don't bother doing it. But like the hymn that we sang a moment ago, the mercy of the beatitude, the woundedness of the beatitude is of the heart. It's in the heart. That's where it's alive. And the heart is able to, it's a kind of a heart consciousness that we're developing that enables us to be more attuned to what a particular moment needs in our day. So this teaching is not, I repeat, is not a moral injunction. It is not an ethical teaching of Jesus at all, even though it's presented that way by many preachers. It is really an invitation. It is an invitation to a spiritual practice. And there's a big difference. Ethical and moral things usually come to the head. A spiritual practice is done through the heart. And it's an invitation to look at our day and to be alive and conscious in our day in such a way that we can recognize the places where mercy is trying to come to be or where the woundedness is trying to come to be, and we can bring it to life by attending to it in that particular moment. That is so different from saying, you've got to go be merciful. What does that mean? What does it mean? The more we're merciful in any way that we know, the more rightness of consciousness that comes, that enables us to be able to read a particular moment and know what the woundedness of God is in that particular moment that we can help that person experience. Can you feel the difference between the moral and the spiritual practice? So I'm going to invite you to take up a spiritual practice for a week. Just for a week. And see what happens in your lives. But each day, sometime in your day, whenever it's appropriate for you, look back over the previous 24 hours. And just ask yourself, where was the womb-like moment in that last 24 hours? You'll probably find there are quite a few. And was I ripe enough to see it? And if you weren't ripe enough to see it, don't beat yourself up. Don't get down on yourself. That makes it a moral teaching. But through a spiritual practice, you say, okay, I missed it yesterday. I will be more alert to it today. I will be more conscious about it today than I was yesterday. And when that happens, I bring the womb-likeness of the presence of God into the world, right in my own household, right in my neighborhood, right in my city, and make it available to the world. And if you really get stuck, and it's not quite coming for you, take a walk, but carry a stick. Because what somebody once asked me, he said, how do we get more mercy into the world? We don't. We can't. There's not anything we can do to get more mercy in the world. Because God is mercy. God is everywhere. All we have to do is just wake up for it and live it. And that's what this teaching is about. Ripely conscious. Become the people who live out of the wombness of God. It is so. Amen.